Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss Dune Part 2 and all the chatter that comes with it, as well as several other things. Plus, our topic this week is kind of the flip side of last week. What happens when you love a movie and no one else seems to? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Man of Sync out. Troy Heinrichs out. We're joined by an old standby, a whole classic, if you will, Scott Clark. What's up?
Well, hey, how's it going, man?
You're from The Gaming Outsider, I should say. By God, if I don't mention your podcast, I don't want to make you sad.
I like to think that the reason Troy's not here is because he's busy playing a specific video game that released on PS5
messages. Hey, I'm really having a hard time talking. Yeah, because you're screaming at your goddamn console. That's what it is.
That's exactly what it
Which game is it? Final Fantasy? Is that what it is?
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
He's probably 50 hours in that freaking thing. That's why he I mean, Amanda, we're used to it, but Troy's overreliable.
Aaron asked me if I could come on here and do this episode, and I was also playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and, he's like, I know you got this new game you're playing, but, if you want to come on the show, and I figured John was going to be here, and I was like, if John's going to be here, I got to be there. Any opportunity I can get to talk to this guy, because I don't get to see him quite so often, so I had to be here.
I really appreciate it, and I feel whole finally. It's been a long time that this trio has been here, so I feel really good about it, and I feel whole.
You feel whole. I feel like fuck off. He just went through a whole diatribe about how if John's going to be there. Yeah, I'm going to be there. He didn't say a damn thing about my name.
Well, I see you every other weekend. You complete me, John.
You complete me, buddy.
You both make me sick. What's going on with you? What's new? You got any new gaming conventions and how is Final Fantasy? What game is this one? Which one? Is it a remake again?
It's a remake of the original Final Fantasy, but they actually took the original game and split it up into three individual games. And this is the second in the trilogy. So, it's a big deal in my world. And it's awesome. It's
How long is this game?
They're saying 60 to 70, but for me, that probably means 90 to 100.
Because, gamer hours, right? It's all gamer time. That's what I always call it. How long is this game? 10 hours. Bullshit. 20 hours later. Well,
there's 14 chapters. I'm in chapter 5, and I'm at hour 20. So, we'll see how that goes.
John, you'd be interested in this. Everybody that's not a gamer, you're going to be bored and senseless. But I was asking Scott, how do I drop the difficulty? Because I was playing Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, and it was kicking my ass. And I'm like, I'm about ready to quit. He's like, you can drop the difficulty. I'm like, where? Send me a link. Where? I was ready to quit.
It's a good thing, too, because that game is awesome. It is my game of the year as of right now. Yeah, I know it's awesome. Only March, but it's fantastic.
I've actually made it a point to swear off video games for the foreseeable future at this point.
Me, too. I wish everybody could see the look that John is giving me right now.
why did you choose to swear them off? What'd they do to you? Show me on the Xbox box where it touched you.
They didn't do anything to me in particular, but I've gotten to a point where I want to be more present in my life, and playing video games, I get so sucked into them that I can't be present in my life. So I absolutely want to be able to spend more time engaged with more things. Yeah. Love me, be me, all those things.
Good for you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're both trying not to make fun of you. That's good. Good for you.
I'm not trying to make fun of you.
I respect your choices. That's what I'm thinking.
I don't hear that, but I get it. Thanks.
It's coming through. Mm. Scott, have you been watching any movies or TV shows or anything new?
Yeah, actually, I watched that movie Air Force One Down.
that we gave away a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you gave me a copy of it. I had never even heard of this movie. And I was like, I like Air Force One, so I'm going to give this one a shot.
Did you think it was a sequel?
No, I didn't think it was a sequel because okay. I mean, right.
Where's Harrison Ford at? This is bullshit.
How do you have a sequel to Air Force One?
He's like, still president. That's how.
Get off my plane again. No, this one is a completely different story. It's interesting because it has low budget sensibilities in terms of. Some of the acting is a little suspect, I will say. I think there's like two actors I actually recognized in this film. One of them is the guy that plays Boris from the movie Snatch, which is I love that movie.
So when you say recognized, you don't mean, hey, you guys would know him on the street. It's more like, I saw him in that one thing.
Yeah, I don't even know the actors' names to save my life. Somebody from Orange is the New Black is in this, but anyway. President's Air Force One gets taken over by hijackers and this, you know, rogue FBI agent that's her first time in the field, you know, and happens to be on the plane on this and she kind of kicks ass and takes names. The really good thing about this movie is the action scenes are shot really, really well. I think this should have been called Joan Wick.
There's
a couple action sequences where I was really impressed. I was watching it with my wife, and even she was like, okay, that was pretty cool.
Okay, so you enjoyed it, though. So you did enjoy it?
I did. It's incredibly predictable. You know exactly what's going to happen, where it's going to go, the twists are, and all this kind of stuff. But it was fun for a one watch. It's nothing that I'm burning to see again, but it was enjoyable.
I'd
probably say like a solid 5, if $10 were the full price of admission.
Hey, $5. Yeah, and you also remember 5 isn't a bad score. Like so many people on the internet are telling me.
Yeah.
Ad nauseum that apparently
we're so hung up on you know letter grades from school. Like anything below a 70 is a failing grade, or it depends on which school you went to.
Yeah,
60
yeah.
or 70. Another one I watched. I don't know if I haven't heard you guys talk about it, but I watched Next Goal Wins on Hulu.
Yeah, we talked about it a while ago, but it is a good movie. Yeah, it's a very good movie.
It's pretty cookie cutter in terms of what happens, but it's such a charming movie, and I laughed out loud on more than one occasion. I was pleasantly surprised on that one. It was really, really funny.
It was actually, I think when I described it, I said, you know, it's one of the movies where all the supporting characters are fantastic. Like, they really are. It's really mm-hmm. Michael Fassbender is the only one I think is miscast. You know,
he does feel a little out of place, but I still enjoyed his performance.
He wasn't bad, but he just felt out of sorts.
I couldn't figure out because, you know, he is British, right? Am I correct on that? He's a British fella?
Yeah, he's English. English fella?
Or Australian? No, he's Irish and something else.
Okay.
Irish and German.
We need to get a genealogy test with this guy. You know, just make sure we understand. But German-Irish. There you go. That makes sense. I mean, his first big role, he was speaking Nazi.
Yeah. So. his accent kind of fluctuated for me. I couldn't tell which one he was trying to land on, but it wasn't enough to be distracting. It was just it's a really funny movie. And then, you know, it's based on a true story. So they do the thing in the credits where you see the actual people that it was based on. And then it was really cool. That's really sweet.
Well, we're going to talk about Dune Part 2 at the end of this podcast. John and I are going to do our review of Dune Part 2. And then I'm actually going to segue to another segment that's already pre-recorded that you guys can hear, where I talk with Thomas Bax, his longtime supporter of the show, Patreon supporter as well. And he and I talked about the differences between the movie and the book, just to kind of dive into that a little bit. That was an interesting dynamic, just to hear kind of like why he, and especially why he loves it, because I don't love these movies. I liked the new one, and that wasn't good enough, according to the internet. As John can attest, I've had shitty comment after shitty comment because I said I didn't like it enough, apparently. But
it's like my favorite thing whenever you get dragged for saying like it's cool and everyone's like, you didn't like it enough. My total favorite thing. This is like the second or third time this has happened.
Yeah, just raked over the coals, Scott. I mean, I like the Amber Heard movie. I got trashed by Johnny Depp people. Now I'm getting trashed by the Dune people. I'm just going to, it's like, what kind of hot take is that? I'm like, I gave it a 650, like out of 10, that's like three stars, that's over 3 stars. What do you want? It's a masterpiece. It's not.
Though. Yeah, I'm starting to feel like John with that movie where everybody keeps telling me I have to go see it, and I'm like, well, you're telling me I have to see it? Yeah, then I definitely am going to wait.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm in the same boat as you, Aaron. The first one, I found it intriguing visually, but I don't even remember what happened in that movie, dude. I could not tell you what was going on. And somebody told me that the second movie, it finally reveals what's actually going on. I'm like, if you're waiting till the second movie in a in a duology or whatever you want to call it to give me purpose, then why even make the first movie?
I don't agree with that statement, but I can see why somebody would think that way.
Okay. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen it, but
it's basically like the two movies are one book. So I could see how you could see it that way.
But yeah, I'll wait for Achebeo.
Achebeo. It's like Scott Baio, but Max.
Nice. It's like Scott Baio, but better and less racist.
So it's an interesting dynamic, and I don't think it's racist. It's not a racist movie.
It's like Scott Baio, but better and less racist.
Gotcha. Okay. Thought I was going to have to defend Dune. I didn't want that to happen.
Jesus. Now the Scott Baio people are going to come after you, John.
They can't find me.
I'll give them their address. That's fine with me. Okay.
He lives here now.
He lives in Florida?
He lives in this town
at 1215 Mockingbird Lane, right next door to you? Well, that's wild. All right. Tell him I said hi. Hey, we're going to move on. I was talking to several people over the past week about dubbing in films with language other than English, including Thomas Beck. You're going to hear at the end. He at one point said that I wasn't being authentic if I'm not watching subtitles. But I've had a lot of people kind of throw a little bit of negativity in my way because I said I was watching the English dub version of Shogun, right? Because they have an English dub version on Hulu, and I think it's a pretty well done version. And subtitles, while I do enjoy subtitles and I have no problem with them, after a while, you end up just, in my mind, watching the bottom third of the screen as opposed to what's going on because there's so much being said. And I kind of want to know what you guys think. Like, do you feel using dubbing rather than subtitles is any less authentic in terms of the experience? Because my reply, of course, was snarky. And, you know, my retort is basically like, you realize we're not in feudal Japan, right? Like, these are actors on sound stages. There's nothing less authentic. You know, there's literally Selma Hayek giving me a mud bath. Wouldn't be any less authentic than this. What do you think, Scott? Other than I'm not going to get a mud bath from Selma Hayek.
It doesn't bother me one way or the other. If I have the choice, I usually go with the subtitles because I kind of like to see the film in the way that the filmmaker originally intended. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we talk about things being art and, you know, we talk about censorship. You know, we don't want to take out the curse words and stuff because that's how the artist wanted it. You know, that's a problem, but, you know, there's a good subset of people that have zero problem with changing every line of dialogue into another language, which I understand that's done so that people that don't speak the language can understand it. But to me, it's the same thing. It's part of the art in some respect, but I'm also not going to yuck anybody's yum. If you want to watch it that way, watch it whatever way you can and enjoy the film. I'm not going to knock you if you watch it with dubs. I'm not going to watch you if you watch it with subtitles. Do you? I don't really understand this idea of we're going to tear somebody down because, you know, they watch it in a different way than I do.
Yeah, I don't really believe in the idea of ruining the authenticity of it. I grew up watching everything dubbed in one language or another. If it wasn't in English, it was in Spanish. If it wasn't in Spanish, it was in some other language. But I only speak English and Spanish, so it doesn't really help. But the thing for me is that I agree that if you watch something with subtitles on, you end up paying attention to the lower quarter of the screen as opposed to the entire image that you have being laid out in front of you. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who is who reads really slow because I'm dyslexic, it's hard for me to keep up with everything that's going on. And not only that, but if I want to remember what the what was actually said in the movie, I would much rather read it as opposed, I would much rather hear it as opposed to read it, see it, whatever.
I'm not convinced. I'm sure which take you got now.
I'm not either, honestly. But I would much rather hear it over anything else, just because I would, it gives me the ability of connecting the words to what I'm seeing in front of me, as opposed to being having to read everything. And you know, if I have to listen to something dubbed, I'll go with English. But sometimes I would actually switch it over to Spanish, because I feel like Spanish dubbing is usually better than the English dubbing for whatever reason.
And I know this isn't the language we're talking about, but I really like listening to a Japanese movie or anime or whatever series in Japanese, just because I think the language sounds so cool, and it makes it some of the lines across in like a different cadence than it does in English. I don't even know if that's like an accurate way to say it, because I don't understand the Japanese language. It's very, very complicated, but it is... I just like the way that language sounds. So if I have an option,
Like, you could say, I tooted, and it'd be like, what? And it just sounds very badass. Like you just commandeered an army or something. I don't know.
Tooted. Yeah. Okay.
It's a very, very minimalist example.
I actually have started to watch movies with Spanish subtitles. I actually am trying to learn how to speak Spanish. I'm doing one of those online... you know, courses where you have like daily lessons or whatever. I'm about like three quarters of a year straight of doing it every single day.
Do you feel like you're gonna have a conversation? Because John speaks Spanish. We can test it right now.
No, I'm not anywhere near. I mean, unless we're gonna have a conversation about where my uncle's pen is or something very specific like that. No, it's a crazy learning experience. But one of the things I read to do is to watch a movie or TV show that you're very familiar with, that you could basically quote front to back, and watch it with either Spanish subtitles or Spanish dubbing, so that you kind of learn the language that when you hear it in conversation, as opposed to the stupid sentences that they come up with on these online app learning things, because they're really ridiculous sentences that I would never use.
Well, probably just to kind of tailor you to certain key phrases and turns of the phrase, right? And like
that's probably sort of thing,
imagine.
Yeah. So a friend of mine's wife, who's Colombian and did not speak a stitch of English when she first came here, she used to watch TV with us, and we'd have to have the subtitles on in English on anything we were watching, so that that was her way of teaching herself how to speak English.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
See, TV does good things.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad I'm not alone in that. And I really am sorry if I offended anyone who's Japanese and thought that was a... That's the first example that came to my very small mind.
I tooted.
Just saying.
Now you
and I have Shogun in my mind, so everything sounds like that, because I've been watching Shogun, which is phenomenal, by the way, if you haven't been watching it.
Do you ever do that, though, when you watch a show like that in another language and like you start... Like your inner monologue is almost in like that accent or,
yes.
or language.
Which is why if I'm watching Telemundo, I can't go to work the next day, because I will be in HR in no time.
That's
hello, perfect. Jessica. How are you?
That's not how they talk.
Watch Telemundo, man. My wife is Ecuadorian. I have watched a lot of Telemundo. I'm just letting you know that's what it sounds like.
There's a lot of novellas that he's been watching, and that's exactly how they talk to each other.
And I don't mean that disrespectful, because I get captivated. I'm like, what is happening? Who slept with who? What?
Well, yeah.
Great stuff.
You know, on the flip side of all that, my favorite thing to point out about Witcher, the first season of Witcher, I had no idea what was going on in that show. And I know they're speaking English to us the entire time. It wasn't until I turned on subtitles for that show that I was able to figure out what everyone was saying.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are shows. I used to do that with Game of Thrones here and there. When you get certain really heavy English dialects or whatever, and they were just too thick and I couldn't understand it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Or I want to be able to see how the names were spelled. It helped me remember the names better, because there's so many characters in that show.
Oh, I never cared about that. I was just like, I didn't give a shit about that lady, that girl.
Oh, no. I wanted to be able to talk about it. I know Brian Williams. I had to speak about it educationally, man. Yeah.
He's pretty good. He was
or
pretty
like,
good
I had a similar experience that you're talking about with the, I just mentioned it earlier, the movie Snatch, where the
Brad
accents
Pitt?
Are so thick. Yeah, Brad Pitt. You like dogs? Oh, dogs.
You know, you watch that movie enough and Brad Pitt starts making sense.
Yes.
And it frightens me.
You look like a boxer. I love that movie so much.
That's a great movie. He's great in that. That's probably one of his best roles, honestly. Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, you've just learned that I don't like Fight Club. We talked about Fight Club on here, and Scott Clark is the gentleman I was referencing when I said, you know, one of my good friends loves that movie.
Yeah, I literally texted him while I was listening to the episode. And it's like, all these years and you never told me you didn't like Fight Club?
That's
that was like my
you.
All-time favorite movie for years.
Yeah,
well,
I don't
years.
Want to. That's why I'm not going to sit there and... Because if somebody keeps telling me, well, I really don't like Rear Window because of this. I'd be like, I don't give a shit. You know, it's at some point...
Disturbia
I just
was better.
Piss off.
Wow.
That's just not even cool.
Shots fired. But I agree with you.
Freaking that
one, just to piss him off.
What was that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie with the same goddamn plot as Fight Club? There wasn't one. I just wanted you guys to think
fight.
For a second. Like, really? Van Damme had the same plot as Fight Club? No. Wasn't
I was going to say Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Double Team. Or maybe there was one where he played twins.
Double Team. Is that the one with
That
Dennis
was Dennis Rodman?
Rodman
but there was one where he played twins. God, now I'm going to have to watch it this weekend for no reason.
I'm going to have to watch it this weekend. Is absolutely nothing that anyone has said about Jean-Claude Van Damme movies since the 90s.
Double Impact. That's what, that's what that was.
That's the one. Right.
That's classic. Absolute gem of a film. Almost as good as Air Force One Down.
I really think you should watch that movie, man.
I will watch it. We should also talk, NCIS is expanding their universe with an origin story for Jethro Gibbs. I assume he started back in summer school. And they're bringing back fan favorites, Tony and Ziva. They're getting their own spinoff of Paramount Plus. Look, I know none of us probably watch NCIS.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one because I saw this and I'm like, I have nothing to contribute.
I have nothing to
contribute.
I've seen one episode. I really couldn't tell you much more about that show. It's just more proof that they are tripling down on content and universes. Like, that is what we're getting with corporations these days. That seems to be what they want. I can't wait for doing the
Jethro,
TV show.
I saw Jethro Gibbs, and I thought Jethro Tull and the Bee Gees were making a collaboration. Oh, so
it sounds better.
It does. It sounds quite a bit more interesting.
It does. I'm sure there's a lot of people. That show's been on for years, though, so we're wrong. Because people love that show. People love it.
People do love that show. I don't know how that show's been around for years, and yet I think Blue Bloods is coming to an end. It's on the same network, for God's sakes. I was reading some of the articles about this, and I would have to admit that I have probably watched maybe 15 episodes throughout whatever seasons of this show. Or I might have put it on to have some noise on that I don't give a shit about anything else because I'm cleaning the house or some shit. But the idea of a Jethro origin story that takes place in the 90s, I was like, I can get behind that a little bit, you know, because the
NCIS origins, that's actually what they're going to call it.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Tony and Ziva, I would probably watch it for Cody. But not for numbnuts. I don't give a shit about him.
I like them together. I saw them in like a couple clips. They seem like they're fun together. Sure, I guess. I don't particularly care one way or the other. I just wanted to talk about the universe and the fact that they're expanding it. So The Walking Dead keeps expanding. NCIS keeps expanding. Law and Order keeps expanding. Like content. Yellowstone keeps expanding. So, I mean, this is the way of the future, I guess. Everybody wants to.
I mean,
universe.
That's everything, right? Let me look at what's been going with superhero movies. We're getting like you have to like keep up with every TV show, every movie, every series, like everything.
Yeah, I pass. Not doing it. Pass.
Yeah. pass. Speaking of, let's pass on to the next topic. But first, our show is independently funded, therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you do, you sign up, you get immediate access to any content in your respective tier. We just had a bonus episode, and Amanda and I are going to South by Southwest later this week, actually. So there's going to be some bonus content. There might be some behind-the-scenes panels and stuff like that that we share on Patreon only. Now that you understand what that is, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. So last week we discussed what happens when everyone seems to love a movie but you. This time we're flipping it, and we're going to look at the positive side of that equation. So what do you do when you love a movie that no one else seems to like? And this is very important. I don't mean guilty pleasures or movies that you know aren't great but you still enjoy. Like, I was trying to see how can I sell The Adventures of Ford Fairlane in this topic, and I realized I can't. It legitimately is not a good movie. I just really enjoy it. So, I mean, you have to feel like the movie is great for whatever your reasons, and you just don't understand how other people don't see it. So does it bother you when you feel like you're on this lonely island and no one understands you?
I have gotten so used to it over the years that it doesn't really bother me. I realize that there's just something about my taste or the way I see things that is not as popular as what everybody else seems to see things or enjoy. There was a period in my life where I just loved everything, single movie that I saw and watched, and I wanted to own it. I wanted to have them. I wanted to be able to watch them whenever I wanted to. And I've gotten quite a bit more discerning especially since I started doing this show, because I don't love as much as I used to. But yeah, it feels weird. It feels like I am a little lonely, and I always want to sit there and show somebody one of these movies that I love so much and see how they take it. And I'm usually still wrong.
Wait, are you trying to say that we suck the love out of you? Is that... Like, Scott, you heard that, right?
Yeah. I would never say Scott sucked the love out of me.
No, I'm saying the show sucked the love out of you. You said I don't love as much as I used to. How is that our fault? Love better, I guess. I don't know.
Jesus. Scott, I love you, man.
I love you too, man. Man, I wish we had glasses to clink right now.
Yeah, I know. It'd be just pointed to drive him nuts.
Scott, what about you? Do you get lonely when... Well, I know you do. I know how you feel about this.
Yeah, I really don't like it when people don't agree. If you remember, confrontation and discourse may make for interesting conversation points on a podcast, but it always gets under my skin and it makes me feel weird. But I just kind of always... I always chalk it up that whether it be the way you guys did it last week or this week's topic, I just always kind of assume there's something wrong with me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just the wackadoo that likes things or don't like other things. There must be something wrong with me to keep me from enjoying something, or there must be something wrong with me that makes me enjoy this thing that everybody else hates. And I've just accepted it. I've dealt with that my whole life, so yeah, but it does bother me. Yeah,
I'm gonna get you the number to my therapist, man.
No, your therapist is terrible. So what do you mean by Scott, so what do you mean you've been doing it like your whole life and you finally accepted it? Not you, have you accepted that maybe just you just have a difference of taste? It's not really a...
Well, it's a difference of taste, but like, even growing up, when I loved things that everybody else didn't, it was, I wanted people to enjoy the things that I did because I wanted them to enjoy it with me. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I feel like somebody doesn't like a film that I absolutely adore, or I just really find hilarious or moving or whatever, I want someone else to have the same experience I do. And in a lot of cases, that's just not possible because they either are shut off from it or it just didn't click with them the same way it did for me. My favorite thing is to have a shared experience with a film. You know this from, like, I love going to see comedies with both of you guys.
Yeah.
Because when we're all laughing together, we're all enjoying something like that, it is like one of the best feelings in the world.
Yep.
And I agree. Even outside of comedies, it's the same way with action movies or drama movies. I want someone else to share in that reason that we like something that we do. And when somebody doesn't, and I can't convince them to either give it another shot or see it from another perspective, it bums me out, because I want that for them, if that makes sense.
I find, well, it helps that my I don't give a meter is pretty high, but I don't get bothered by it. I just say, well, I guess we just have different tastes and whatnot. I don't like when people barrage me, though. Like, that really pisses me off. Like, if you, I didn't like it. Okay. Well, man, that's awesome. Okay. Well, I didn't like it. Well, you're just trying to be, what were they saying, the Dune thing? You're trying to be cool. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. That's my dream.
It's not like you said Jonah Hex was awesome.
People are weird, man. I swear to God. Couldn't love it enough. It's just, it's weird.
Wait, it's not awesome?
Go look on the Facebook, our Facebook page, and find that my very short Dune, I didn't even write a full review. I just wrote like a quick synopsis. Man, they're just bam, bam, bam. Anyway. You know, I try not to, it's when people keep coming back and like just won't let it go. That's when it just irritates the crap out of me. That's the only time it really bothers me. It's just like, let it go. We didn't agree. We didn't see the same thing the same way. It happens. Not a big deal. But we didn't agree. And I think more people should just move on from that. And instead of trying to hammer home the idea that you need to like the thing that I like at all times.
Right. I've gotten better at it. Like in the early days of social media, I was a lot more liberal about voicing how I felt about things on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And I've realized that over the years, it's just not worth the fight or the argument anymore. Like, okay, all right. But I also don't like leave it in a way like that pisses off the other person. I just kind of ignore the thread at that point.
You don't want to antagonize?
I don't want to antagonize. And it's just a losing battle. You're not going to convince somebody, and it's not worth the energy. I've got way more things to do besides argue with a stranger on the internet.
Right. The amount of energy I have for that sort of stuff and then, and you know, life that I want to live is so much more than fighting with somebody that I don't even know.
Right. I mean, think of all those video games you have to ignore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only time I get irritated is if I'm trying to show someone something or watch it with them and they say they want to watch it with me. I never jam it down anybody's throat. Hey, if you don't care, you don't care. There's too much stuff to watch. I get it. But if you're like, oh yeah, I want to watch that movie. And then they're just playing with their phone the whole time. I just can't do it. I'm like, all right, I'm out. Peace out. I have no interest in watching this with you anymore. You obviously don't care.
It doesn't matter if I'm at the theater or if we're in person. I have to have my phone off when I'm hanging out with Aaron.
Sorry? It's my thing. You're not watching it. You're not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know? I also insist on it on the podcast, and you probably noticed that Man and John don't always comply. You know what I'm saying?
I did not notice. So uh-huh. Quality editing.
Editing is great. Let me tell you. Editing is smooth. All right. Well, let's talk about some picks. Let's go round robin and just a few movies that this occurred. And one I'll use an example of is I'm a big fan of A Million Ways to Die in the West. It got 33% of Rotten Tomatoes. It was not well received. And if you ask most people that have seen it, they'll say it wasn't funny. I laughed my ass off in that movie.
I agree. I think that movie was hysterical.
Well,
the Mila Kunis joke alone was worth it.
There's so many jokes that are just, it's too long, but Charlize Theron is great. I think Seth MacFarlane is really, really funny. I just love that movie, but it was not well received and audiences didn't really like it. So it always gets me, you know, hey, what's a great comedy and I'll recommend it. And then wait, no, I heard that was terrible.
But I love how Aaron gives an example as a way to get his honorable mention.
Yeah, that's how I get an extra one in. That's what happens when you write the format, brother. You can do whatever you want. It's like being Willy Wonka, which is a better movie than Dune. So moving into actual picks, I'll start with The Chronicles of Riddick. 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was kind of trash when it came out. This is, you know, it was kind of like a reboot of Riddick. It was Riddick, but not, even though it's technically a sequel, it's really not. I mean, it's really launching its own thing. There's a lot of world building here. The Necromongers and all of that depth and
it's a space opera.
Space opera. And I love the way it was done. You got Judy Dench in a Vin Diesel movie. Like, what the fuck is happening? And then it just, Carl Urban was great. It was just a combination of factors that I love that movie. I absolutely adore that movie. And that there were a few fans that would come on board and say, oh yeah, I had fun with it and da da da. I'm like, no, I think that's a great movie. Honestly, I think it's, in my opinion, the best movie Vin Diesel's done. And I mean that.
Wow.
We're not, as a lead, Saving Private Ryan fans, calm down. So It's just a great, I think it's a great movie. I think it's a great story. It's a great world builder. Like, I really wanted to see more in that universe and where it was going and kind of what it all meant. And we never really got that. We got a, you know, quasi, we got another Pitch Black is what we got with the third movie. So we never got the promise that came from this first one, but I absolutely love that movie.
I need to go see it. I watched the first one, Pitch Black.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I love Pitch Black. I think you introduced that to me back in the day, but I stayed away from the sequel because of the negative reviews. So
yeah. Obviously that was a thing. John, you saw it, right?
It's been a while since I've sat down and watched it, but I do recall that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. I enjoyed there was a cartoon that came out around the same time that followed Riddick as well. That was called, Dark Fury or something like that. That was more about Riddick it was an in between Pitch Black and mm-hmm. the Chronicles of Riddick. And that was very cool. And I liked the world building that they had going on. So I was excited to see where they were going to go with it. And though I find things that are enjoyable about the third movie, I'm a little disappointed that all it is just a rehash of the first movie again. It's you know, as if we didn't learn our lesson with doing things like this at all. But it is a great movie, and I'm with you on that.
All right, John, what do you got?
So my very first pick I'm going to go with is a little known movie that not a lot of people love, and I don't know why, but it's Hudson Hawk. It's sitting at a 31%. It stars our sweet good friend Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello, and it is one of the more charming movies that you'll ever sit down and watch. And I joke about it, but it's a movie that I've loved ever since the first time I saw it. I love the mechanics of how they rob things and the way they keep time by singing songs to each, you know, throughout the whole process. I think that that's fantastic. It's got a great beat to it as far as rhythm of story and how they're moving from one set piece to another set piece. And everything about it is just well done. And it's something that looks like people are having fun making. And I don't understand how nobody likes this movie.
I love this movie.
Yeah, it's become a cult classic over the years, but when it initially came out, this movie was wildly trashed.
I saw it in the theater 6 times, I think. I loved it.
Wow.
So most of the box office was me. So I'm with
six
you,
tickets was I most of the too. Box office.
I didn't do well. Yeah, it didn't do well, my friend. Good choice. That's good. I think more people love that movie than you realize, though.
No, it's a cult. Like I said, it's a cult classic. It is. It has become a cult classic for sure. But when it first came out, it did not do well. And I was poked at for loving this movie so much.
Scott, what about you? I know you had less time to prepare.
It actually wasn't that difficult to come up with one. I could have come up with a bigger list, but and my first one, I have 4 just in case this one doesn't count, because it did get 55 on Rotten Tomatoes. Is that too high?
No, I think no.
For
no,
this?
No. That's but, not a it's not positive.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because it was rotten or whatever, the little green symbol. But I feel like a lot more people like this than 55% of it, but The Cable Guy, I feel like it is the redheaded stepchild of Jim Carrey movies. Like, most people are like, don't even think of The Cable Guy when they think of Jim Carrey movies. And it's one of my favorites of his, because he did something completely, yes, he was out there in wackadoo, but he did something a little bit different with comedy. And I've always appreciated that movie. And there are things in that movie that make me laugh out loud every single time I've seen it. But it's a weird movie. It's a genuinely weird, uncomfortable movie. And I feel like nobody ever talks about it anymore, except for like, they'll just say Cable Guy, and that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think I love that one, but I don't think it's bad either. I think it was an interesting movie. At least they were trying something different, for sure.
It just seriously cracked me up. There's so many quotable scenes in that movie that just seriously cracked me up.
That was like the height of his career, too. Like, he was just on fire.
And I think that's possibly why it didn't do as well, because everyone was expecting wild and zany, but not in an uncomfortable, because that was like a dark movie.
It was a dark comedy.
Yeah, it was pretty dark.
In every way.
But I loved it. Absolutely love that movie. I've probably watched that one more than any other Jim Carrey movie that wasn't Liar Liar.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
and I really love it. Basically, like a comedy stalker movie. It's just like, let's make fun of the stalker, because Jim Carrey was a stalker, and he was was it Ben Stiller?
Ben Stiller was a director.
Or he's the director.
Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. Okay. And Ben Stiller also had the cameo where he was the one of the twin brothers that murdered the other twin brother. Yes. And it was like this case that was going on in the background. And that whole courtroom scene that they're just like watching on TV just made me laugh so hard. I probably can't even say it on this podcast, but it was really, you couldn't get away with that joke today, but
no,
it was great.
No, you couldn't.
Yeah.
Wow. My next one, if you're a longtime listener, you've heard me mention this movie before, but unfortunately, people do not rave about it. It's not spoken of in the popular military.
Polite circles?
What's that?
In polite circles?
Yeah, in polite circles. It's just not really recognized as a great film, as a great war film, which I think it is. And its savior, 56% of Rotten Tomatoes, it's just seen as mediocre, and it's not. I think it's a great film. It's the best performance Dennis Quaid's ever given. And what it is he basically loses his wife in a terrorist attack. So he joins the Foreign Legion as a way to get revenge against Muslims. He just becomes full of hate. And he ends up as like an anonymous mercenary in Bosnia. And then he comes across this woman who is pregnant, a young Serbian woman, and she's about to be killed because of her dishonor. And so he keeps going to save her life. And it's just him rediscovering himself and redemption and just going through the hell that he's been through and trying to come out to the light on the other side and be the guy that he used to be. I just find it to be a great film. It's probably in my top five military related films, like war films of all time. I just absolutely love it. I would put it up there with a Saving Private Ryan and a lot of other ones. Like, I absolutely love that movie.
Nice. Well, you also have a soft spot for Dennis Quaid.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do. I told you the story where I went to see The Long Game at South by Southwest, and a lot of times, you know, the actors are there, and mm-hmm. I went to the bathroom, and then, because Magnum P.I. was in the movie, Hernandez, J. Hernandez, and Dennis Quaid was also in the movie. I sat literally across the aisle from Dennis Quaid, which was a highlight of my day, and so I go to the bathroom, and then J. Hernandez comes to Magnum P.I., and I'm like, hey, you know, I thought you'd be taller, and da-da.
Really? You said that?
Well, I know. I said, I thought you'd be bigger, is what I said. I was right in the men's room. And then, you know, he left. Yeah, of course I was.
And you said, I thought you'd be
bigger?
You're
welcome. You're welcome. Yep. Total me. And so I went back and sat down. And then 10 seconds later, Dennis Quaid went to the bathroom. 10 seconds. I could have been doing my business right next to one of my favorite actors. Who knew?
Yeah.
I mean,
cool story,
that's
man.
That's not how most people would frame these things, but.
You almost stood next to Dennis Quaid at a urinal. That's a great story.
That's the story. Yeah. Woo!
That's gonna be perfect. Hey, Aaron, why don't you tell that story about how you almost stood next to Dennis Quaid at the urinal?
John, what do you got?
All right, so my second choice is another movie that I love so much. I've already mentioned it before in this podcast several different times. It's one of the great movies that M. Night Shyamalan has done. That's Lady in the Water.
Oh,
I love this movie. Oh, God. Look at that. Look at the look of disappointment I'm getting from Scott right
okay.
now.
Okay. You're getting it for me, too, brother. So
I've only seen it once, so I'm going to hear you out, and maybe I'll give it another shot, but man, I don't think I got it. So sell me on rewatching this movie.
I don't think I got it.
I don't think I got it. Look, it's just, to me, it's a beautiful story about a man who's lost his way as far as being able to love and connect with people. And he's forced into a situation where he is connecting with somebody who is above everything else, very much ethereal. And he is forced to care for somebody that he hasn't had the care for anybody in a long time. And it's, to me, it's a story about how he had to reopen himself and reconnect to himself to become more of who he's supposed to be, as opposed to just hiding away as just a simple maintenance guy for this apartment complex. There's that side of the story that I really love. I love the side of the story where it's this urban fantasy of anything could happen and anything can like intersect with our world. And even though, they're weird animal-like creatures that are doing whatever it is they're doing, I just dig the idea of it. So there's all sorts of different aspects that I like to go on these flights of fancies with that are both simple and easily grounded into what the world, our world is today, but also can take you on this whole trip of adventure.
Is that the one where the guy only exercises one arm?
Yes.
Yeah. I found that super disturbing when I saw that in the theater.
Yeah. I'm not, I know Amanda, this is one of her, she hates this movie, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm on that side of the fence. I tried. I
mean, she believes in ghosts, so I mean, you
can't really think anything. That's true. What does she know? What does she know? But I'm not a fan of this one either, so I'm on the side of the people against you on this one. Sorry.
That's fine. That's fine.
I'm not knocking you for liking it, man. I just
not at all. Just that I didn't like it. That's all.
You guys don't have to like it. I did.
I'll give it another shot someday.
Scott, now we're on to you.
Oh, this movie that I'm going to talk about is one of the first ones I thought of, and I went to look up the Rotten Tomatoes score, and I was shocked to see that it was 10%, and I don't get it. And I will preface this by saying I haven't watched it in years. It's been a long time, but I remember as a kid watching this and really enjoying it, and I never understood why nobody did, and it's Kevin Costner's The Postman.
Like The Postman? What?
It was like a really long movie, even for a kid, right? Isn't it like 2 hours and 45 minutes
like
or something?
It's like 19 hours, I think, if I remember right. It's a miniseries. It's six episodes, right?
It's not that long. I don't think it's that long.
I'm just telling you what it felt like.
I just remember watching this.
Is he ever going to deliver that shit? Jesus.
Well, because this one came out after Dances with Wolves, right?
Yes.
So yeah. I think everyone was expecting that from another, you know, epic movie. And that's not what it was, but I just found it really interesting. I was captivated the whole way as a kid. But yeah, like when you're a kid, your attention span isn't nearly what it is when you're an adult. And even then, I mean, I had to have been 16, 17 years old when this movie came out, 97, I think it was. And I really enjoyed it. So I did not understand the hate. So this conversation has made me want to go back and rewatch it and see if that still stands, but man, really enjoyed that movie and never understood why it was just universally hated. I think it honestly was hated because it wasn't Dances with Wolves. Like it didn't reach that same high bar, in my opinion.
I'm sure that's part of it. I just remember not enjoying it. I didn't enjoy Wyatt Earp either. I just really wonder if, but I love Open Range and I love Dances with Wolves. So maybe it's a hit or miss kind of thing.
I love Waterworld.
I love Waterworld too. I saw that movie like seven times. It ruled.
Yeah.
That was a callback to Cable Guy.
You guys love Waterworld? That's worth talking about. Really?
Yeah. I almost put that on the list, but I thought, like, I feel like it didn't do well with critics, but I feel like everybody likes that movie. Like,
no, most people hate that movie.
Really?
What? Yeah. No, I don't think they do.
I love Waterworld. That is such a fun movie. It's kind of a stupid ending, but Dennis Hopper just being full on Dennis Hopper in that movie was great.
Right. He's just like, I just got out of rehab. This is what I'm going to do. It's great. Now, I enjoy Waterworld. Not to like find an interesting way to throw in my honorable mention, but there you go.
And Jack Black was in that movie. Did you know that?
Yeah.
In Waterworld?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a pilot in like, remember when the scene where he shoots the plane from the Trimarine with a harpoon?
I promise you, whatever you're going to describe, I don't recall, but John might.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen that movie so many times.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. He's like a pilot in the plane or a passenger in the plane that's like circling around him. Just like a tiny little shot. You only see him for a second, but yeah. Aaron, what's your next one?
So my next one is what I would consider, I would put it as, you know, I've talked about Ridley Scott. I don't think I don't think he's a bad director. That's not what I mean. He's gotten really deep into style over substance. Like a lot of his films, I don't think are as good as they could be. They always look fantastic, but they just don't work as movies anymore. And he's had a couple that people love, right? Alien, obviously. Gladiator, love that. But there's one that people kind of trash that I absolutely adore, and I would say is one of my, it's probably my favorite Ridley Scott movie, And that's wow. Black Rain with Michael Douglas. He is a cop, Nick Conklin, and his partner is Charlie. He's played by Andy Garcia, and just like one of his first roles. He is just a wonderfully fun and energetic character. And they catch this basically Yakuza henchman named Sato, and they have to take him back to Japan. But the problem is that Nick has been under investigation for kind of being on the take. So when they get to Japan, through a series of circumstances, they end up losing Sato in Japan, and he basically can't come back because they think he's been paid off to let him go because they think he's on the take. So he has to find him. He can't go back until he finds him. And so the whole movie is, you know, fish out of water, et cetera. You know, they're learning Japanese customs, and he's trying to investigate a crime in a country that doesn't do it the old school cop way that he does, where he's basically like, you know, breaking rules and, you know, just not being the best cop ever. They're very respectful and dutiful and doing everything by the book. And he just doesn't know how to do that. So it's just that conflict of worlds coming together and colliding and trying to solve this crime. And also kind of diving into the kind of person that Nick Conklin really is. And Michael Douglas, I think, is a great actor when he wants to be. It's just, I love the movie. I love the way that they interject culture into the film. You learn a lot about Japanese customs. It's shot in Japan. I mean, it just looks absolutely stunning. So every moment, you know, Ridley Scott can capture a scene visually, and he does that over and over and over again. The score is fantastic. It's just, I think it's a fantastic film. Like, I absolutely love it. It had a 54% of Rotten Tomatoes. I am alone in that belief. I get it.
Wow.
But I absolutely love that movie. I've seen it probably 30 times. I love it.
I read this on the format and thought it was, and in my mind, I had Hard Rain from like 98 with Morgan Freeman.
Well, I do like Christian Slater.
Yeah.
Do like that's what Christian I thought. Slater.
I didn't realize until you started talking about it that I totally had the wrong movie in my head.
Wouldn't that be awesome, though? I love Christian Slater wet.
I have this image of Chubby Rain. So.
What is Chubby Rain?
Chubby Rain.
From Bowfinger?
Oh, Jesus.
Chubby Rain was the name of a club here in our town back in the day. Used to have whole rock venues.
Yeah, there's a Bowfinger. The fake movie they were making in Bowfinger was called Chubby Rain. I think I've seen this movie twice, and I think I've enjoyed it both times I saw it. The reason why I keep on saying I think is because it's not anything that sticks out of my memory, but it also doesn't stick out of my memory of something that I don't need to give my time to.
All right. John, what about you?
So my final one is going to be one of my favorite movies that I'm going to put into like my top 50 movies. And this is a movie that I get surprised at by every time somebody tells me they hated it. And that's Sucker Punch.
Oh, God. It's, yes.
You hate it.
I love this movie so much. I love the nuance to the story. I love the imagery of it. I love what Zack Snyder is doing with everything about it. It's just so much fun to watch. And if you pay enough attention to the story, it's a heartbreaking story that will give you some feels if you want to just open yourself up to it. I've watched this with somebody who ended up crying at the end because they thought it was such a beautiful story. And they were so on the side of Sweet Pea. So, you know, it's just, to me, it's just a great story. And I love the feel of it.
Isn't that the one where Scott Glenn is always like, oh, and one more thing.
Yes.
Like, it's a great movie. And they're pretty girls kicking ass. And
you guys like it. You're simple men. Simple men.
That's not the reason why I like it.
That's part of the reason why I like it.
That's not. It's not the reason. Bro, no, I'm being honest too. It's not the reason why I like it. I appreciate looking at beautiful women. Of course I do. Am I going to sit there and say that's the reason why I love this movie? Well, then if that was the reason why I love this movie, then that volleyball martial arts movie that's based off a video game would probably be at the top of my list. Scott, help me out here.
DOA.
DOA. Yeah. You know,
there's only one DOA, and it's one with Dennis Quaid. And that's also a great movie.
Right.
There's another
I think that Sucker Punch really feels like a CG video game. Like it really does. The whole thing looks like a video game when they're doing the dream sequence thing.
As opposed to a non-CG video game?
Well, yeah, there's live action full motion video games.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening. I feel like there's a nerd fight, and I wasn't invited. But also, DOA, great movie.
With Dennis Quaid.
And before you write, yes, I know that's a remake of an older movie, but I didn't care because this is the one that matters.
Right.
We could just have a whole Dennis Quaid
episode. I'm a fan. All right. That's what fandom is. You know, it's kind of like these Dune fans. I'll fight people that say Dennis Quaid is a hack actor. I will.
He's a huge fan of movie 42.
Easy killer. Easy. Easy. I have standards. Scott, last one. What do you got?
Last one. I will not be surprised if neither of you have ever heard of this movie. It's difficult for me to put in words why this one has such a soft spot for me. Mm. But have either of you seen the movie Gunshy? With Liam Neeson,
yes.
Sandra Bullock, Oliver Platt.
Yes, that's I remember that was like 15 years ago, I want to say.
It's a older movie, yeah, but it's such a ridiculous story.
I don't remember it.
But it cracked me up. It's Liam Neeson is an undercover cop, and Sandra Bullock is the the nurse that gives him his enema. And she winds up helping him get through because he's like super stressed out about being undercover. He's like always worried about getting killed and everything. And Oliver Platt is like the mobster guy that he's like undercover trying to bust, basically. And hilarity ensues. Liam Neeson goes to group therapy and the people in his therapy group wind up getting involved. And it's just a super silly movie. But Liam Neeson is like being Liam Neeson through the whole thing. Sandra Bullock, this was back when Sandra Bullock was, you know, Miss Congeniality days, so she was super cute and spunky. And I've been trying to find this one streaming somewhere because I wanted to rewatch it for a long time and it never pops up because I feel like it's such an obscure movie. That have you seen right. it, John?
I don't think so.
It's hilarious. At one point, Liam Neeson is trying to, you know, be calm when he goes undercover, and he takes whatever medicine the doctor prescribes him, but it's very a drowsy medication. So he's talking to Oliver Platt, and Oliver Platt like puts a gun in his face right before he passes out from whatever he had taken. So the rest of the movie, Oliver Platt thinks that Liam Neeson's character is a total badass because I put a gun in your face and you just fell asleep on me. And it just like that whole concept was hilarious to me. It's ridiculous. The girl that gave him an enema is now like his best friend. Like who came up with that? And for me, the whole thing worked. And I've watched it multiple times back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
You can still rent it on digitally. You just can't stream it for free. It looks like.
Right. Yeah. Like what? Like $4 to rent it, or yeah, 13 really, to buy it, or
if
something.
If you're
like
really
that.
Committed yeah. to your love,
right?
Yeah.
$4 loves it. But he doesn't love it. $4.
Yeah. $4. I mean, you know, we live in a world where people are like, man, I really want to watch that, but I don't want to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much other stuff to watch.
Yeah.
So
I get it.
I don't have a problem waiting for it to come to a streaming service somewhere.
Hey, Michael Weatherly's in this too.
You literally just said you don't like him.
I don't.
Okay. It's so weird.
I almost said, hey, that douchebag, Michael Weatherly, is in this too.
Yeah.
Hey, that guy I don't like, he's in this movie too. That was 2000, by the way. That was 24 years ago.
My God. My God. And nobody's still heard of it. We're going to segue. We're going to move past that to our Dune 2 review. Scott, you are more than welcome to interject if you'd like for the spoiler-free review, if you would like to.
For the spoiler-free part, it for you because, sure.
Okay. All right. Well, most of the spoiler stuff I'm leaving for the conversation after this point. So it's going to be spoiler-free, but we will be talking about the movie and what we liked and didn't like and just dancing around it. So Paul Atreides still lives on the outskirts of civilization as he learns what it means to be a Fremen, right? His mother
Fremen.
What?
Fremen.
What's the same difference, dude?
You said Freeman. It's Fremen.
You don't think that was written to mean Freeman? Like, Freeman. That's really what they're going for. And if they're going to be that on the nose, I'm going to be on the nose. Okay?
No, Freeman has a completely different connotation if you study medieval history.
Son of a bitch, teacher. All right, explain, please.
Well, you've got the hierarchy of, you know, lords and serfs. Uh-huh. Lords were at the, or you get the king at the top, lords were the nobility, and then you had the freemen and the serfs, which were the lower class. They're basically a lower class of citizens, the lowest of the low.
So either way, I'm right.
Except for the pronunciation.
Okay, freemen. His mother is converting to the Reverend Mother, and her name is Lady Jessica, but she seeks to protect her son and unborn baby against everything else, even if it means stoking the flames of religious fanaticism, as well as the Freemen believe Paul to be the Messiah promised in prophecy, as you learned in Dune 1. The one that will possibly deliver them all from the tyranny of the Emperor's plight to steal all their spice. Of course, they still have to contend with the Harkonnen family, who have a new warrior on Paul's case, a psychopath named Fade Rotha. Everything's on this collision course if Paul can stay the path and be the man that Chani, who's played by Zendaya, wants him to be. But is he that man? And that's where I want to start, John, because Timothée Chalamet, it's really pronounced Timothée, but you can call him Timothée Chalamet. He's this guy. He's the Paul Atreides, right, of Dune Part 2.
Right.
I had problems with him in the first movie. I just felt like mm-hmm. he's not the guy that is going to win me over to being a leader and a badass, and I'm not convinced mm-hmm. he is yet. What say you? Do you feel like he captures this role better in this film than he did the first one?
No, I'm still stuck in this frame of mind where he's not Paul Atreides or even somebody who would be able to have the stature or the charisma to be able to lead a bunch of people. I totally buy if Paul Atreides was this child of a prince and that was all his character was supposed to be. But if he was supposed to become somebody who then evolves into this, let's say, Messiah, because they say it in the movie as well, then you get this, he just doesn't have it. He just doesn't convince me. There's a lot of different casting issues that I find with this movie, and he's the top of the list.
Now, what do you say? Because I've had that complaint. I wouldn't call it a complaint. I don't think he's bad, right? It isn't a complaint to say that Timothée Chalamet didn't do well enough in the part. I think he makes the movie flow. I get it. He makes the spice flow. But he's not taking the movie to the next level. Like, you want to use terms like masterpiece and fantastic, then you got to have everything across the board. And that's the lead is where it all starts. And I just don't see him as that captivating, charismatic leader. He's not going to sway me to a cult. You know what I mean? He's just not going to do it.
Absolutely not.
Zendaya as Chani, she probably could. She does a lot of thinking and discussion with her eyes and her movements in that respect. There's a lot of her beliefs and her non-beliefs that really factor into the story as it rolls forward here. And I really, really appreciated her performance. Did you feel the same about that?
I was okay with her performance.
Very good.
I thought, you know, yes, she's doing a lot of great acting and she's doing a lot of, but she's still, to me, she feels out of place. She doesn't feel, everybody feels like they're part of this civilization of the Fremen, and she feels like she's from a different planet entirely from the rest of the Fremen. So that's my one challenge with her, is that whereas everyone does seem like they're well and embedded into the culture, she stands out only because she's putting a lot of, like, almost a little too much of herself into the role.
All right, you said you have some casting issues. Like, what are the casting issues?
Timothée, however you want to pronounce it, he's my primary. My secondary is Christopher Walken as the Emperor.
Really?
Wow. I did not appreciate him as the Emperor.
I mean, he doesn't do much.
He doesn't do much. And I was expecting him to, like, be just sitting there looking at the nothing and have a Werther's original in his mouth and just kind of flipping it around in his mouth. I don't understand why Christopher Walken was the choice for this character. Cause you're talking about an emperor. He's supposed to be this imposing figure that leads an empire that spans through the cosmos. This guy doesn't do that for me in this movie.
It's wild how we have completely different opinions on this. Because I thought it was...
Yeah?
Yes. I like that he's not over-the-top, ridiculous, you know, overlording figure. He's just a man who has done this for a very long time. He's very comfortable in his rule. And he doesn't really feel much excitement or enjoyment in it anymore, but he's done it for so long. So he's just going to prep his daughter, who's Florence Pugh, Florence Pugh, to take over for him one day. And I feel like he has maybe 10 minutes of screen time. That's it.
Right.
And I think he does very well with what he has.
But I feel like he feels too frail to me.
I think he is frail. I think that's why she's getting, queued up to take over, because he's frail. He knows he's falling. She should be the next in succession in that respect. Speaking of Florence Pugh, I thought she's wonderful. She doesn't get much to do either. She's only in the film.
No, she doesn't, but she's 20 awesome. Minutes. But,
Rebecca Ferguson, I'm sure you're going to rave about her because you have a love thing for her. So mm-hmm, she's great, mm-hmm. I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. She steals the scenes every single time that she's on it.
Austin Butler.
He was so good.
Okay. Why did you like him so much? I'm going to talk about him a little bit more with Thomas. So I'll save my thoughts for that. But why did you think he was so good?
He was clearly somebody who was enjoying the role. So clearly somebody who was like, oh, I am going to like dig into this being a psychopath and live it and love it and do everything about it. And it was just so, like, as far as like when you look at somebody who's going to supposed to be a leader of a force, he played that part so much better. He had a gravitas to him. He was intense and he was scary and he was just all of these different emotions that can equate to, I better follow this guy or I'm going to end up dead. I will likely end up dead because I am following this guy, but still.
All right. So what did you think overall? You and I were both on the same page that the first one was pretty okay. It was just dull. Unfortunately, I call it a slog, and I mean that. It was a slog to get through. I did not enjoy watching that film. I found this one to be a lot better. I enjoyed it overall from start to finish. I didn't keep checking my watch. I was enthralled. Yes, there's even dialogue. Denis Villeneuve. There's cinematic. There are visuals that are stunning. I absolutely agree. I feel yes. like this was a magnitude of capturing visuals with sound. Does that make for a magnificent movie? Not in my opinion, but it makes for a good movie. And I really did enjoy it and thoroughly started to become invested in the lore, which the first one did not do for me. I was not invested in that lore. I did not care. I just wanted that movie to end. It was boring me, senseless. Now I feel like, okay, we're heading somewhere. And I know some people, you only had a first half of the book. Doesn't matter to me. You had one movie. You gotta sell it in that movie. Yeah, that's just how filmmaking works. Mm-hmm. You don't get to say, well, it'll make sense in the next movie. No, it needs to make sense. The first movie, it needs to be enjoyable. The first movie, and it needs to really work. The first film, there's a reason why so many people, and it's not just a few, so many people said that the first film was boring because nothing really moved at any reasonable pace. It was just very sluggishly paced. This feels like a film that keeps going. It's heading toward a goal. It's setting up the idea of fanaticism, the idea of what it means to really play with the politics of war. Really what happens when everyone around you tells you you're amazing, but you don't believe it, but you have to, or you think you should. But you know it might be the end of civilization if you do. I mean, there's a lot of factors that come into this. And I feel like those were complimented and mostly realized, even if it's not this magnificent opus that so many wish it were. How did you feel when you walked out of it? Did you feel similar?
Sorry, I'll just... We can put the soapbox away a second there.
Yeah, sure.
I found myself puzzled when I was leaving the movie theater after watching this, because overall I sat there and I liked the visuals and I liked a lot of what I was seeing on screen, but I feel like at some point I should have been feeling like I was going to jump out of my seat and cheer for the Paul Atreides. I should have been able to like be afraid that something was going to happen to Paul Atreides. And And there were enough differences in this movie versus what I've seen before in both the sci-fi series and in the original movie to know that, okay, well, they're diverting some things here and there. So, okay, but I just didn't have that feeling. Can I say I had a good time watching a movie? Sure, I had a good time watching a movie. Do I think it's amazing? No. I feel like it's missing way too much of the other things that I like, that of the parts of the story that I do know. And it was just good. It wasn't an amazing movie to me.
And didn't you watch the miniseries, the original movie?
I did.
Like, you've watched all the Dunes, right?
Yeah, I watched the miniseries and the original movie. And the miniseries, the original Dune movie it's boring to me. Even with all the cool stuff that's in there, it's boring to me. The miniseries I thought was beautifully done. It's got a Paul Atreides in there that you're like, yeah, let's go do this shit. It's got everything going on, going for it. And it's the same exact story that of the first movie was, only they take their time with it because they have 6 or 7 hours to be able to do it with. So I was more invested into that story. And when they announced that they were going to do these movies, I was hoping to see something on the level of that, but the casting started making me nervous right away, because again, Timothy Chalamet is not somebody who I sit there and say that's a leader of men.
Don't get me wrong, I love him as an actor. Wonka was fantastic. I think he has potential in different. I've just had a hard time with him in Dramatic Fair, where I feel like you're just longingly looking into the camera. And I know everybody in this movie either whispers or screams. That's literally all they do.
Right.
There's no real genuine normal conversation like we're having. It's always like, you know, and I say this when I'm talking to Thomas too, but it's true. Hey, what's gonna happen in silence? Which is what I'm gonna use from now on every time John goes monologuing too long. I'm just gonna shout at him like silence and see if that works, because apparently that's how you command a room.
Whoosh. Right.
Yeah, no, I really wanted to enjoy it the way that so many fans are apparently enjoying it. Like, so there are many that are saying that it's magnificent. It rivals Empire Strikes Back, this or that. You know, it's one of the greatest sci-fi epics of all time.
Are people that are liking it that much, though, fans of the source material or the original series?
I'm sure most of them are. I'm sure.
Because I feel like the people that are saying it's the first one I'm talking about, because I haven't seen the second one yet. Mm-hmm. But the people that complained about the pacing of the first one have never read the book, or, you know, have no idea what's going on. Because I feel like the first movie was not a good introduction to this universe for someone that has no idea. You know what I mean? Does the second one bring you in better than the first one does?
Yes.
Which I know is a weird thing to say about a sequel.
No, I mean, it really does. Yeah, it's definitely the second chapter of a book, right? Like, or the second half of the book. It's really filling in a lot of what the setup was in the first movie. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I get it. Like, it's building to this huge element. I just feel like it could have been done a little faster in the first movie, and then this could have been fleshed out a little bit more in this one. I don't know, but it definitely, and I understood everything that happened. I didn't think the first movie was complicated. Like, I had no problem following the lore. I thought it was pretty simplistic, honestly.
Yeah, it was.
So many people have said, well, you just didn't, just because you didn't understand it doesn't mean, I'm like, it had nothing to do with not understanding it, man. It wasn't that complicated. Like, I got it.
Yeah.
It just was not moving at a relatively interesting pace.
What's to understand?
Yeah. It was a slog. So this one, I really enjoyed, Scott. And there's a few battle scenes in here that are pretty, pretty top notch.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything amazing. I do have some issues with editing. I feel like they jump around a little too quick in terms of what's going on. You know, long periods of time happen in a cut. And I think that's not really doing non-readers a good service. Like, it's really not helping them understand, like, why are we here? How do we get from here to here?
You're going to go spend 6 months in the desert by yourself. The next thing we know, he's running around killing people.
Thank you. I literally, you're about to hear the same conversation I had with Thomas about that exact segue. Like, it's basically, we're supposed to be spending 6 months in the desert, and we just go to, he's back, and apparently he's already done his time. So right. there's weird segues and transitions like that that really don't flow, and I think it really affects the overall greatness of the film. But I still think it's a good film. So if $10 full price of admission, what do you give it, John? We're going to get into the spoilery section here now.
I give it $6.
Okay. Well, I give it $6.50. Just so you know, if you're wanting to put that out there on the internet, don't hide your scores. Only give it a 10, because your life will be easier and less complicated.
No, I have come for me. They can't find me.
I have one more very important question for both of you.
Okay.
If $10 were the full price of insertion, what do you? What would you pay for the popcorn bucket?
And with that, we're moving on. All right.
That was well executed.
That was very well done. Well done.
Perfect. Aaron will tell you that he's so tired of that joke, but very well executed.
Oh my God. All right. Thanks for that. We're going to go. This is going to be a spoilery section with Thomas Bex. Again, longtime supporter in front of the show. And he's going to kind of go into the books a bit and what that all means and the differences there. And we talk about that and why he loves this film so much, and I don't understand the love, and he's trying to help me understand it. So I think it's a really interesting conversation. So here you go. Here's Thomas Bex and I talking spoilery about Dune Part 2. And as we move into this, I just want to say, you know, this is very spoilery. Thomas and I talk about a lot of the information that's in the book and not in the movie, and vice versa. And one point that I think is kind of important, and that we didn't really get into while we were having the conversation, is the part that Anya Taylor-Joy plays as Aaliyah Atreides. Now, in the book, she's very much alive. She did, because a lot of the time jumps are not really represented fairly, so she's kind of an older child and ends up, she's the one, spoiler alert, that kills the Baron in the books. Now, it's obviously changed to Paul here. It gives Paul a lot more agency, and she's not even born yet in the movie, so I don't know what that means for the future, but apparently his sister has a lot of cool power, so that could be a character that is utilized in some other way in the future. We didn't really talk about that particular aspect, and I just thought I should mention it before we get into all of this discussion of Dune Part 2 and what's in the book and what's in the film. So there's that. Kind of interested to see where they go and where they take that. And in order to really bring Anya Taylor-Joy into the fold, they really have to do a massive time jump. I don't even know if that's feasible with the cast that they have, because they would have to age them all up, right? And I don't think that sounds very interesting for most people. So let's get into it. Thomas Bex, let's take it from here. I'm here with Thomas Bex, the longtime supporter of the show and listener and my God, Dune fan. So you, before we get into it, you also have a podcast of your own. Do you want to pimp that real quick before we move into this?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'm a co-host of the Adventure Game podcast. So if you're into gaming, into narrative games like point-and-click adventures, or just, you know, adventure gaming in general, we are the place to be. Adventure games are not dead. They are very much alive, and they are a lot of fun to play nowadays. So check us out on anywhere where you can, where you're listening to your podcast.
There you go. I want to get into Dune. Now, by this point, John and I are going to review the movie separately. We're just going to go over overall thoughts on the film. You and I have talked about it. You love this film. I like this film. I did not like the first film, and you also love that film. Now, I kind of want to know, do you think it's because you read the book? So there are books. Actually, there's a series of books. You read the books by Frank Herbert, right? I got that right?
Yeah.
See, look, I'm already learning. Do you think, what's the difference? Like, why is this hitting so many people differently, I guess? Because some people claim this movie in particular is a masterpiece. I'm saying it's just good. And I haven't seen much in the middle of that.
Yeah, that's a very good question, because everybody except you guys that I've talked to consider these movies like masterpieces,
so we're
including
haters.
Myself.
You're saying we're haters. Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm getting.
No. The movies are just not for you. But no, there is just I'm not entirely sure if having read the book, because the two movies are they are the first book, and the probable third movie will be probably the second book, Dune Messiah. I am not entirely sure if having read those will has enhanced my enjoyment of the movie, besides seeing what I have read a long time ago on screen realized as I have never seen it realized before. I mean, you have to, whatever you think of the movie itself, it is stunning to look at. So Denis Villeneuve, you tend to mention that he is not a big fan of dialogue, which is probably correct, but he is an extremely good visual filmmaker. And a lot of his things, and I think that's why he is connecting with Dune so well, and maybe that is why you are not connecting as well with it, is because he lets a lot of things be said by the visuals or by not necessarily by dialogue. I have no issue with that. I was just, with the first film and this film as well, I was just stunned for like 3 hours experiencing the movie. I saw the first Dune, I think I saw 4 times in the cinema. I got it on Blu-ray. I really want to, experience it more. That's one of those movies that I really want to have. I want to own, because I think it's so incredibly well done, and it gave me the same feeling as I had when I first saw The Fellowship of the Ring. Like, this is something I read that I had something in my head, even though it was like adapted not entirely well before, like with the June 1984 version.
Sure.
The Fellowship also had like a version, the Ralph Bakshi version before that. And, but this was just so incredibly well done. The way only a movie can do it, you know, the combination with the visuals, with the story, with Hans Zimmer's music. It was just, it just hit me really, really deep.
Now, do you feel, okay, so when you come to Paul Atreides, right, Timothy Chalamet, or Timothée Chalamet is actually how you say it, but everybody calls him Timothy. When he's carrying this role, you know, he's supposed to lead them to paradise. He does not want anything to do with this for most of the movie. And then at the very, very end of the film, he makes a flip and he basically embraces it so he can conquer the empire essentially and, you know, take over as emperor. That's like his whole main goal there at the flip. And, you know, that's his journey in this film. His journey is basically he's going to, you know, I don't want to say betray Shani, but he kind of does, right? And he's going to take the emperor's granddaughter for himself. And this is how he's going to ascend to the throne. Now, by the end, it feels very much, I think you could take it multiple ways. But to me, it reads, and you tell me without spoiling anything in the future, he's kind of embracing this role for his own benefit. It's not really that he believes he is the Messiah or this leader of, or the chosen one, so to speak, of this prophecy. It's just he finally embraced that this is the only way I'm going to achieve my revenge and also take back what was rightfully mine. Is that a fair assumption or am I reading it wrong?
That is 100% correct. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say, you can already see glimpses of, the man he is becoming. This is a slight deviation from the book because, can I talk what happens in the book with this?
Sure. Or, yeah, this is spoiler cast. Yeah. We're open. You can do what you want.
Oh, okay. So in the book, the marriage to
I would go carefully with anything we haven't seen though. So I would just be careful with that.
Oh yeah. No, I'm sticking to the first book, which is these two movies.
Okay.
So in the book, the marriage to the emperor's daughter is purely a political thing.
Which makes sense.
It is 100% a political thing. And Chani knows that. But the character of Chani has been changed a wee bit. She's been giving way more agency in the movie. Obviously, if you cast someone like Zendaya, if you do it in the times that we live in, you have to do that. And she's also been giving more like a counterweight to Paul Atreides, who as I've heard somewhere, I think it was a Ringer guy saying he literally drinks the Kool-Aid of the myth, but he knows this myth, this legend, this prophecy has been fabricated by the Bene Gesserit. He knows that. Chani knows that. So he kind of is like exactly what you said. He breaks in the movie. He breaks Johnny's heart,
right?
And he chases her off, but he kind of knows this has to happen for him to get on the path, or he thinks that has to happen for him to get on the path that he wants to be on. And in the book, she still stays as his concubine, as his real love, while he is married to the princess, whose name escaped me at the moment. Sorry, I've been very bad with names.
Irulan.
Yeah. So that is a change I kind of like, because it allows for more conflict, and conflict obviously is interesting in the in movies and stories, and I guess we'll see how that will play out in a third movie, because I think they already started production on June 3. So that is, yeah, it is what it is, exactly what you said. I'd almost say that this is not a hero's journey, but a villain's journey.
Interesting.
Paul Atreides is on, because it is quite simple. Frank Herbert never intended. He wanted to highlight the very real dangers of following a charismatic leader, of believing in prophecies, and because what Chani says is true, that prophecy has been keeping them chained to that. You know,
they've
been
waiting. That's how they enslave us, right? That's what she says.
Exactly. They've been waiting for this outsider to come and free them, even though they should be freeing themselves, which is what Paul also says in the beginning, when he is still on the path where they said, well, no, the Fremen need to be
led by one of their own.
Freed by one of their own, led by one of their own. And he changes that once he has drank from the blue liquid, the mind-altering thing, mm-hmm. basically like the spice thing from the baby worm. And he starts believing in his own myth, using it to enact his revenge, as you were saying, even though he knows when he does that, terrible things are going to happen.
Yes, because he talks about them throughout the movie. Like, throughout the entire film, he's talking about this is what's going to happen. I've seen it. Like, with my own eyes, I know this will happen. And you can tell at the end, he doesn't care anymore. Like, he just wants his ultimate revenge. And that, you know,
exactly.
Whether he ends up being a villain, I mean, I guess time will tell, but this is kind of the beginning of an ascension. And it kind of shows, like, what happens when even a good man gets too much power or buys into their own mythos, you know? It's the danger of
power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And he is now a very, very powerful person. Mm-hmm. And he's leading a holy war. And basically, he is just doing the exact same thing as what every other ruler of Arrakis has done, except now he's using the Fremen to accomplish his own goals.
Yeah, and they're buying hook and line and sinker. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what happens when you have like these zealots, these fundamentalists. We've seen that this in our own religion, in our own history, and in the Earth religions as well. When the fundamentalists take over, it's very hard to stop that. Which also makes it very eerily prescient in what's currently happening in parts of the world. So,
yeah, I found that actually kind of fascinating that they didn't pull it back at all, because there's a lot of religious zealot discussion, interaction, just how blind followers can be, how you know. And I think it was Chani at one point that says, you know, if you believe that there's a chosen one, you sit and wait as opposed to doing something. And that's the danger of it. You wait for that chosen one, and someone's going to come and claim that throne at some point, whether they are or they aren't, because everybody wants that job.
Yeah. Even though, you know, the whole chosen one is a story fabricated by the Bene Gesserit for centuries to make sure that one of those bloodlines can be the Kwisatz Haderach, which is their own idea of this chosen one person, which now looks to be Paul Atreides. The story is quite dense. The story is also written in the 1960s, which had a completely different political climate on Earth as well, of course. And the comparison to Arabia in the Arabic tribes and everything. That is 100% on purpose. Also in the names and everything. That sounds also very Islamic, very Arabian, and that is on purpose because he took a lot of the things from that culture as well. Because the Fremen are basically like Bedouins, and if you look at how they were used during World War II, for instance, and World War I, they were also like Lawrence of Arabia. So basically, Paul Atreides is some sort of Lawrence of Arabia on a universal scale.
Going back to Paul Atreides, some of what happens with him, I don't think the film does a very good job of explaining. Maybe you can enlighten me, right? Me non-book uh-huh. reader. It's kind of like when Game of Thrones is out. It's like, what happened in the book again? What happened? So, you know, and I know this happens in both films, right? It happened in the 84 version when he's fighting uh-huh. Sting, which is kind of goofy yeah. if you go back and rewatch that one. And it also happens here. But when he drops the silence, and it's almost some kind of metaphysical reaction, like he commands some kind of power in that moment. Can you
yes.
explain that to me? Because I don't think the film did a very good job of explaining that.
No, I think they did that on purpose. That voice, that command, that is, you could compare it to like a magical spell that commands people. You see Jessica use it several times as well.
Sure, you saw her use it, yes.
That is a Bene Gesserit ability. They can influence people. She uses it on Chani to make sure that Chani plays her part in the whole prophecy, because Chani doesn't want to. She doesn't want to do that, but Jessica forces her to do that. That is the sign that Paul is the Kwisatz Haderach, because he's not supposed to be able to do that, to use that that power. Uh-huh. Now, in the book, and also in the 1984 version, they actually weaponized that power. I think that was quite hard to for some reason Villeneuve decided not to use that in this book or in this trilogy, maybe in the future. But in the 84 movie and in the books,
he cracked the ground actually, in the movie.
Yes, they used that power. They somehow magnify that. So Paul teaches the Fremen how to use that power. So he teaches it to other people, and then they somehow use technology to magnify that, and which basically makes them unstoppable. You know, being on giant worms also kind of makes them unstoppable, but then it really makes them unstoppable. That's how they win the holy war that starts at the end of the movie. So that's a very dangerous power that he uses. And again, power corrupts, and even good intentions will not be able to save him in this case if he goes along that path. And we'll have to see how he goes.
Well, you've read the books. The third movie. You already know where he's going. So Rebecca Ferguson's Jessica, or Reverend Mother, as we call her now.
Like, yeah,
she's really using the zealots for her benefit. She's clearly manipulating them. And so she, I would say, is at this point a villain. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
I mean, I get why she's doing it. She's doing it because she ultimately wants to protect her son and her new unborn baby and whatnot. But it feels very much like she's going to use all of those people just to do whatever she needs to do.
Exactly. Yeah, she basically does what the Bene Gesserit has been doing for ages, except now she focuses on her son. And once she becomes the Reverend Mother and those powers are awakened in her and those memories are awakened in her, she kind of embraces her Harkonnen side mm-hmm. and uses that, manipulates quote-unquote weaker people to do her bidding. And that's, she can be, she's frightening. She's quite scary. She's definitely not the same caring, loving mother that you see in the first movie.
No. I'm glad to see that, because Rebecca Ferguson is great at that. I mean, Rose the Hat, if you ever saw Dr. Sleep, she's just phenomenal in evil roles. Anything that goes a little bit darker, you know.
She's a great actress. She can do so much. And I love the way what they did with the look of the Bene Gesserit in general, but especially her with the, well, I guess it's tattoos on her face and all that kind of makes her really, really intimidating. Even if she was still a good guy, she's not totally evil, but she is doing her own thing. Making trying to protect Paul, but maybe she unleashed something that they can't quite control anymore.
What did you think about this Harkonnen family? You know, you've got Baron Harkonnen, who is still in Skarsgård in the most gross fat suit he could find. He looks a lot like that guy from Blade, if you remember him. And then you've got Austin Butler as Fade Rotha, and then Dave Bautista as Beast Raban, who I gotta say, I love that he basically plays a bitch in this movie. He's an absolute whiny bitch. Like, he just turned into a total coward and pansy. I like that turn. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this family and how they delivered them based on what the book had?
Well, in the books and in the 84 movie, they really focus way more on how disgusting they are. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily how evil they are, but how disgusting they look. And how they're basically the embodiment of the seven sins, you know, gluttony and greed and everything. It gives it, in these movies, I kind of like it better because they make him more evil, more sinister. They still look very, very striking. And also that we see the Harkonnen homeworld with a black sun. And apparently that's why, everything is in black and white when it comes to Harkonnen. It's also their way of thinking is also quite black and white. You're either with them or against them. And if you're not strong enough, you die. So there's constant intrigue, constant backstabbing going on. And eventually that gets the Baron killed, which is not a big loss, of course. But yeah, I kind of like how they portrayed them. I do like what you said as well, that Raban was a bit was not, but on the other hand, the fight between him and Gurney Halleck, I kind of liked that it was over so quickly. A lot of people were complaining about that, but I kind of loved it. Like, Gurney was just okay, I'm gonna finish this, and it was like three strikes, and it was done.
Yeah,
I really dug that. I was like, yeah, this is probably how it would happen. Yeah,
I could see that though. I'm sure a lot of people wanted to see a big drawn out action scene, and those two kind of felt like they had one coming, and then it's very, very short sighted.
Yeah, definitely, because in the first movie, Raban is the one who slaughters all the he leads the attack on the Atreides, and Gurney has been wanting to get his revenge on that. And he wasn't going to draw it out. He was just going to, like, I'm going to kill this asshole, and I'm going to do it quick. And Gurney, as we saw also in the first movie, is a brilliant fighter. So it makes sense that he would do it like this. Plus, we also, from a technical point of view, we also had the, we're going to get the big fight between Fae Rautha and Paul Atreides, which was way more important to the story. And if you had another big fight before that, and in an already long film, it probably would have looked cool, but I think I agree with the choice to speed it up a bit more by making that very quick.
I just really, that's probably one of my favorite aspects of the film is how they neutered Beast Raban throughout the film, because in the last film, he's just this big badass who just tears everything down, right? In the first film, that's what he does. He just massacres everybody. And he starts that way in this one, but slowly, because he's getting just his ass handed to him over and over and over again, you see his fear, you know, fear is the mind killer, right? So it starts breaking his mind apart, and he becomes weaker and weaker. And then he just, I think that's a big factor why that fight was so short, is because he had almost given up at that point. Like, he was done.
He just, absolutely. Yeah. The more he was getting he was becoming so scared of making mistakes that he was making mistake after mistake after mistake. So fear was the mind killer indeed. Very very well put.
Now, one thing I have an issue with the movie. So you say masterpiece. Here's where I have. I'm just going to give you one example of an issue I have. Right. Mm-hmm. I think some of the editing and the scene setups are kind of almost piss poor, because you go from Paul is out there proving himself in the desert. Right. He's going to go out, and then of course Johnny goes out to help him. Fine. But then it just segues and moves on to an attack on a spice harvester with barely any explanation. it just segues to that. And we almost like don't get to know. So he completed it then? Like, I assume they accepted him. I mean, I just feel like there's no real closure to certain moments. It just kind of moves to the next thing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. But it didn't bother me. Was kind of bit of maybe expected, like, okay, they're training. Yeah, in this case, maybe having read the book kind of helps there.
Fills in the blanks.
Maybe a bit subconsciously, because as I said, I read the book like 30 years ago, but I am going to reread it before any third part is coming out. But yeah, I guess it does fill in some of those blanks where it's maybe not that important to know that he finished it. I mean, the fact that he is on that raid with them and holds his own kind of implies that. It didn't bother me. But I can see that it might bother some people.
How do you feel about the new Fade Rotha? You've got Austin Butler out here, and I feel I liked Sting. I did. I like Sting for whatever. I don't know why. I just thought he was just, what a wild casting choice to have Sting. Yeah. And now you've got Austin Butler, and I feel like he, at first I felt like all he was doing was just staring at the camera, doing that whole, I'm bad. I'm evil. I'm bad. Look how dark I can look at the camera. Look how evil I look. And then he started putting his movements into it. And I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to come along and buy into this guy. What did you think about his performance? I'm just kind of curious because he's a really big character in the book. And, you know, this is a huge fight. Do you feel like they delivered in that respect?
Yeah. I think they did show why he was so feared. Because he is brutal, but he is also honorable in a way. Like, he really does want things to go a certain way. He's like, in D&D terms, he probably would be lawful evil.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that his brother, who is supposed to be this big badass, cowers before him at one point, also shows him that he's the bigger bad at that point. And the fight between him and Paul also shows that Paul is not invulnerable. Like, he almost dies in that fight. It's not like he won that easily. And I think that is also important to know that, to remind that this prophecy is a made up story, and he can still be killed. He's still immortal. So yeah, I thought that was pretty well done. I love the aesthetic. I love the look, the boldness with the black teeth and everything. That aesthetic really thought was really cool. And he fought like a madman. So I thought that was also pretty cool. And it allows them also to show more of the Bene Gesserit manipulations going on behind the scenes. You know, with one of the Bene Gesserits getting pregnant with him, so they could preserve the bloodline and all that stuff that was going on there. That was also important to link that, because they really are like much more manipulative. Like, they plan their schemes centuries ahead. So I thought that really fit in well there. So yeah, I really like that.
I came to like his character. I was not like, at first, I'm just stop staring at the camera, dude. I feel like you're just doing a TikTok video right now. But eventually he came around, and I'm like, all right, I'm buying into him. And by the end, I was really kind of bummed, because I knew once that fight happened, just because I didn't read the book, but I saw the 1984 David Lynch version. So I remember, Sting died, you know, so I knew that was coming. But I was very, very sad, because I was starting to like that character a little bit. You know, just to have somebody maniacal. I got to say, though, and here's where we probably really deviate a lot from each other. I don't think he's bad. Please don't take this. You know, I feel like with this movie, if you don't say it's absolute praise, you're a hater, which is insane to me, but whatever. But Timothée Chalamet, I don't think is the best casting for this. I just don't, because there are very important parts of the movie where you need to understand why this whole world is following him, and you also need to believe that he's a badass. And I have a hard time with both of those. Now, he's not bad. He does good enough for me to stay in the movie and say, you know, embrace it and go forward with it. I just don't, you know, if this would have been somebody like a Robert Pattinson or, something along those lines, I feel like I would have bought it a lot more, you know, maybe younger Robert Pattinson, but because, you know, he's supposed to be a younger character. I just don't know if Chalamet is the right guy. I mean, he's good, but some people are acting like this is an Oscar caliber performance, and I don't see it.
I wouldn't go that far, but I did like him in the role. He has the right looks. He is a good actor. If Rebecca Ferguson was a standout, I think in the first movie, in this one it was as I said, I'm bad with names nowadays. Stilgar.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah. I thought he was a standout in this movie. Being both bringing some levity and also bringing some heavy themes into it as the true believer.
Mm-hmm. And Zendaya. I really thought Zendaya was fantastic. She's very quiet, very reserved, very contemplative, but I think that really served the film.
There was a lot happening with body language in the movie, sure. Which I kind of like. That's probably because Villeneuve doesn't like dialogue, so...
He doesn't. And this is one... this is my other big critique about the movie. When it comes to dialogue, when it comes to actual performances... Now, visually, everything is pretty stunning. I have no qualms about that. The guy can shoot a beautiful film. It's always going to look... I don't think his editing is quite great because he can tighten this shit up. Scorsese, you know what I'm saying? Like, just bring this together a little tighter. But why does almost every character either whispers or screams, and there's not much in between. There's no just genuine general talking like we're doing. It's all, hey, you're the chosen one, or silence. You know, it's one of those two.
Well, you don't want to wake the worms, right? So you got to be whispering.
I guess that's probably the best explanation right there. That's the worms. They're afraid of the worms. I get it.
I mean, have you seen the worms? They look bloody amazing. I wouldn't want to be eaten by them.
Yeah. I will say that the worm riding scene where he goes out and he has to prove himself by catching the biggest worm they've ever seen. That was a pretty fantastically realized scene, I have to say.
Yeah, but that had to be. That was that's one of the key scenes in the whole book as well. You know, that has to be, he had to nail that. And he did. He did. I love, that was one thing that always stuck with me with the book, where they actually explain how they can write the worm, because it doesn't really get explained, but you see it. It doesn't get explained in words, but you see it happening where he lifts up the worm's skin. It's all like all these parts of the skin that cover each other, which makes sure that sand doesn't get under his skin, because it might be a sandworm, but he doesn't want to get sand inside his body. So with the way they write the worms, they lift up that piece of scale his inside becomes open to the outside, so sand could get in. So that's why he doesn't, why the worm doesn't dive in and they can write the worm. So I thought that was pretty well done, and everything they consume becomes spice. So yeah, it's quite. I thought the worms were quite stunning. Not the worm popcorn bucket though. That one was a bit scary.
Oh man, I'm about tired of those TikTok jokes. Everybody's making a joke about that popcorn bucket. I'm like, look, you know what? Just if it's consensual, I have no problem with it.
You know? We don't get those here in Europe, so we don't get those popcorn buckets.
I think you're going to be okay without it. I really do. I think you're going to be just fine. It just feels like it's dangerous.
I know, but the Ghostbusters one for the new Ghostbusters movie, that one looks really, really cool. I would love to have one of those, but yeah, unfortunately, we only get the normal cardboard buckets here. So
if it makes you feel any better, I never go anywhere near them, so I never see them. I'm just like, hey, I do not want to be tempted to spend $30 on a popcorn bucket. It doesn't even come with free refills. Like, I can't even just bring it back and get free refills every time. Come on.
Does it at least come with some butter?
I'm sure you can get as much butter as you want and, you know, go get a private room or something.
That was not what I meant, but I get it.
The only other thing I would say, I thought Florence Pugh was wonderful as always. I wish she would have had more to do in this movie. I have to assume she'll have more in the future. Like she
well, the Emperor too. Yeah, you know, you sometimes forget how great an actor Christopher Walken is. But I wish that were a bit. That was my one gripe. Is I would have loved to see a bit more from them in the movie. But, you know, the movie's already long enough, so.
Now, did you see it twice? I know you were talking about going to see it again. Did you end up seeing it again?
Not yet, but I'm going to try and see it in IMAX, but I can only see that in a different city, so I have to plan that.
Oh, you're actually going to leave town to go see this in IMAX. That's how much you love
yes.
it.
Yes.
Okay.
I need to experience this on IMAX.
All right. Anything you want to say in closing on this before we wrap it up?
No, I just, this movie feels like it was made for me. So, I'm very happy that we're getting this. And I'm also hoping, that we get a confirmation of a third one. And if it's, if that one is just as good as the previous two, then, for me, this will be one trilogy that is almost on par with, Lord of the Rings. So.
Now, there's multiple books. I know Messiah is the next one. Can that be the end then? Or is there, do you need to go after that?
No, I think they could end it after Messiah. I have to say, the books become quite weird because there are these big ideas, and he really, really works out those ideas till their logical end. And from what I remember when I read them, I was quite young. I think I was a teenager when I read them. Mm-hmm. They were so really, really, really weird. But I think maybe I wasn't old enough yet to fully grasp all the ideas that were in there. So that's also one of the reasons I want to reread them. But I do think that books 1, 2, and maybe 3, they could add them. But especially books 1 and 2, they could make a very solid trilogy.
Well, I got a feeling, based on the box office, you're going to get your third movie, for sure. Now, do you feel like some of the hype, this rivals The Dark Knight, The Empire Strikes Back, films like that? This is one of the top sci-fi films that you can think of?
For me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It for me, it's up there.
Okay. It's got to be because I didn't read the book then. I don't know. I like it. I just didn't love it.
Oh, that's perfectly fine.
Not according to the internet. It's not according to the internet. Oh, you hater. You don't like anything. You're just trying to be cool.
Like, no. Maybe if this was the first review I've heard from you, then I could have imagined that. But no, I know you. People can make up their own mind. And if this movie was not connecting with you as much as it's connecting with other people, then well, that's too bad. But yeah, I mean, at least you liked it. It wasn't a waste of time.
Yeah, and I didn't hate the first one. I gave it like a 4.5. I didn't like it a lot, but I saw so much potential. This one I like. This one I would rewatch. You know. I would actually watch this one again. And I wasn't bored laying in my seat waiting for this thing to end, which I was in the first one. The first one was a half an hour long or half hour shorter, and I was looking at my watch all the time.
I wasn't bored at all with the first movie, but yeah.
See?
That's me.
That's the difference. Maybe I'll go back and rewatch it and see if I can, you know, see what I was missing. Maybe I was wrong. It happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so many things to watch and experience. But this one is I've been looking forward to it basically since the first one came out. It did not disappoint me at all. So it as I said before, it's giving me the same, almost the same feeling as I had when I was watching Lord of the Rings.
All right. Well, I'm pretty excited to see what comes next. Thank you for not spoiling it. I'm sure we're going to have a holy war. We're going to get more of
That one's pretty obvious from the end of the movie.
Absolutely. And also there's a little bit of a setup that Fade Rotha has a baby out there. So there's, you know, another heir in play. So there's that, you know.
Those Bene Gesserit are not happy with the things that are happening. So, and they are very powerful players as well. So, yeah, there's still plenty of threats that can be pulled on. So,
excellent. Well, we'll see where it goes. Thanks again, Thomas, for coming by. I always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And remember, guys, next time you head to the theater to see Dune Part 2 in IMAX for the 14th time, because it's the best thing you've ever seen in your entire life, buy popcorn. Too much?
Too much butter, maybe.
Jeez, those freaking buckets.
Yeah.